needs. This network gets that.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment. Sports entertainment. Sports entertainment.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
The following is brought to you in association with and from a proud partner of the Shining Wizards Network. Entertainment here.
Yo, what's up, kids? Thank you so much for supporting the show. Thank you very much. The Turnbuckle Throwbacks, really appreciate that. But there's more ways you could support us and help us out. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, leave a review. The more reviews we get, the better we get as a crew. More listeners means more fun, means more stuff to do, right? Simple as that. Go to rantemradio.com, go to shiningwizardsnetwork.com, and go to turnbucklethrowbacks.com and get all of our other content back. Other shows that we support, it's all there. Go get it. It's all for you. You want to buy a t-shirt? Please buy a t-shirt. It supports us. Go to prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckle throwback and get one of four designs. You won't be disappointed. They're pretty fresh to death. More importantly, thank you so much for supporting Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We appreciate it. We love you all. Peace out.
What are you talking about?
Yes, sir!
Get him, Hogan! Go get him, baby!
Come on and get some of this now.
Who's mad now, boys?
Hulk Hogan arrived. Hulk.
What is he doing?
Oh, my God!
Is he the third man?
He's the third man!
What the hell is going on here?
Hulk Hogan has betrayed WCW. He is the third man.
Look at this
picture.
Oh, my God.
What the hell is going on?
Oh, my God.
Are you kidding me?
Probably the lowest shot into perfect. That man did right there, Hulk Hogan.
Let's get everybody out of the dressing room right now and kick his rear end.
Unbelievable, brother.
You just sold your soul to the devil. These years? Huh? What have I been saying all these years?
Oh, my God.
A career of a lifetime. Right down the drain, kid. I hope you love it.
Can you see
just sold your soul to the devil.
See those little hulksters with the tears rolling down their face?
We are not college, that three count.
Now what happens to us? What happens now to WCW?
I never thought I would say that he's yellow, but he may be wearing red, but he's wearing red and yellow.
What do we do now?
I'll tell you what. This is a unbelievable situation right here at Bash at the Beach. Hulkamania, the third guy with the Outsiders, betrayed WCW.
Can't talk.
Excuse me. Excuse me. What in the world are you thinking?
Mean Gene, the first thing you need to do is to tell these people to shut up if you want to hear what I got to say.
I have been with you for so many years. For you to join up with the likes of these two men absolutely makes me sick to my stomach. And I think that these people here and a lot of other people around the world have had just about enough of this man, and you want to put yourself in this group? You've got to be kidding me.
Well, the first thing you got to realize, brother, is this right here is the future of wrestling. You can call this the new world order of wrestling, brother. These two men right here came from a great big organization up north, and everybody was wondering who the third man was. Well, who knows more about that organization than me, brother?
I've been there, I've done that. You have made the wrong decision, in my opinion.
Well, let me tell you something. I made that organization a monster. I made people rich up there. I made the people that ran that organization rich up there, brother. And when it all came to pass, the name Hulk Hogan, the man Hulk Hogan, got bigger than the whole organization, brother. And then billionaire Ted, amigo, he wanted to talk turkey with Hulk Hogan. Well, billionaire Ted promised me movies, brother. Billionaire Ted promised me millions of dollars. And billionaire Ted promised me world caliber matches. And as far as billionaire Ted goes, Eric Bischoff, and the whole WCW goes, I'm bored, brother. That's why these two guys here, the so-called outsiders, these are the men I want as my friends. They're the new blood of professional wrestling, brother. And not only are we gonna take over the whole wrestling business with Hulk Hogan and the new blood, the monsters with me, we will destroy everything in our path, Mean Gene.
Look at all of this crap in this ring. This is what's in the future for you if you want to hang around the likes of this man Hall and this man Nash.
As far as I'm concerned, all of this crap in the ring represents these fans out here. For 2 years, brother, for 2 years, I held my head high. I did everything for the charities. I did everything for the kids. And the reception I got when I came out here, you fans can stick it, brother. Because if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, you people wouldn't be here. If it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, Eric Bischoff would be still selling meat from a truck in Minneapolis. And if it wasn't for Hulk Hogan, all these Johnny-come-latelys that you see out here, wrestling wouldn't be here. I was selling out the world, brother, while they were bumming gas to put in their car to get to high school. So the way it is now, brother, with Hulk Hogan, and the New World Organization of Wrestling, brother, me and the New Blood by my side, what you gonna do when the New World Organization runs wild on you? What you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
Don't touch me, I'm gonna flee the lawyers.
I am the baddest dude that walks the streets today.
I'm going to end your career once and for all right here in Madison Square Garden.
I knew that I just had to go down and give her the thrill of a lifetime, the Rude Awakening.
The last thing I want to do is to own the damn WWF because that's got to be the biggest headache in the world.
Get used to it. Who you're looking at, the man. Woo!
It's time to crack your headphones and forget your problems. You're listening to an action-packed episode of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast!
Ooh, yeah!
Can you believe that was 21 years ago? I can't believe that. I was going through my notes. I'm like, I can't believe it. It came up on my Facebook feed. I was like, I couldn't believe it. Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to another edition of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, live on RantEMRadio.com, part of the Shining Wizards Network as always. It's July the 7th, 2017. I am your gracious host, the Blue Collar Scholar, the Heavyweight Primate, the Yoda of yesteryear, the Messiah of Memories, the Count of Monte... No, I'm joking. I'm not the Count of Monte Fisto. That's Apollo Creed. I'm the Impact player, Mr. Philly Raya. And it's a very dreary day here in the Northeast. Rain all day. Stuck in the house. I figured, you know what? I'm going out tonight with the Chopster. We're painting the town. We're not really painting the town. We're going to see Spider-Man. Opening night. So we've made these plans months and months and months and months ago. But The public deserves another fresh new episode of Turnbuckle Throwbacks, and I'm going to be delivering that. We got a great show for you tonight. Going to talk a little bit about everything that's current. We're going to talk about some, we'll talk about the NWO in a second. But I did watch G1 last week, and we'll preview Great Balls of Fire this Sunday at the American Airlines Arena in Dallas, Texas. Great Balls of Fire. I'm glad they used the Jerry Lee Lewis song, which is for me is perfect. So either way, and then of course I will be replaying the Little Egypt interview we did a couple of years ago, so you guys can enjoy that with all the glow stuff going on. I figured. Play some Little Egypt for you guys. You, whoever did not go back into the archives and listen to it, you can listen to it now. So, yeah, pretty much a short work week because of the holiday. That's always good when you work less and sleep more. I get to sleep a little bit anyway, which is pretty cool. It was a nice day. We went out east to a family, my wife's family, to have a huge like mansion. And pool and all the shit and ground pool and all the food and liquor you can gather up. And we got no traffic. Normally you get stuck in traffic. We didn't get any traffic going in, coming home, which is cool. Got home just in time to watch the fireworks. My wife, as you all know, my wife is like the short bus kids and looking at the Ferris wheel when they go on the field trips. But when it comes to fireworks, she's just in awe of fireworks. So we got to watch a nice, a very, very nice display from Macy's. A couple stuff here on the island. Brooklyn. Saw a bunch of fireworks. Scared the shit out of my fucking cat. My cat was like jumping, twitching like a lab rat. The poor dude, he was like, oh, every time he heard a pop, he would like shake. So I had to, you know, made him sit next to me for a while. And he was like, I calmed him down a little bit, but, you know, it is what it is. So anyway, yeah, we got. So, what else is going on? Nothing really other much going on besides baseball is at the halfway point. Pretty excited about the All-Star game. I'll be home for the Home Run Derby this year, which I like to watch. And apparently it's got some drama this year, which is pretty cool. Guys are beefing it and get in, you know. Guys are smack talking, which is rare in baseball anymore. So then, you know, guys, I like when there's a little bit of drama, a little bit of controversy. The ballpark this year it's going to be in Miami, so apparently the park is beautiful. It's been there. I know Double A's in that area, so he knows about the ballpark. It's a nice ballpark, and I'm glad. I mean, the All-Star, the Marlins, they're division rivals to my Metropolitan, so I really can't root for the Marlins. They did win two champions and then had a fire sale, which I think is expected this year. But it's... You know, their jerseys were dope. Now they're just awful. That M and that Marlin, ugh. It looks like a dolphin and a Marlin did it with a Pride Parade flag. That's what it looks like. It just looks terrible. And that black, I'm not a fan. But it is their colors, and every time you have an All-Star game in somebody's stadium, you rock their colors. So I know the Mets have Conforto and DeGrom going, so that's pretty cool. Yankees got Sanchez and the kid Aaron Judge, who's destroying the ball. This kid is, like, breaking furniture, and he's breaking building pieces in Yankee Stadium. I saw him the other night hit a home run in Yankee Stadium. It was like the kid is just he's on another planet right now. And I'm not a Yankee fan. I went to the Yankee game the day before, 4th of July. Not a new fan of the new stadium. The stadium, to me, does not have that baseball feel to it. When you went into the old Yankee Stadium, no matter what kind of fan you are, if you were a baseball fan, it was truly magic. But this new stadium is like a mausoleum, man. It pissed me off. Me and Choppy going to get some snacks. We get there like an hour early because we hit no traffic going to Jersey, right? So me and Choppy get to the game. There was like 8 of us deep, right? So Choppy's not a big baseball fan, but he's there because like, he got the tickets from him and his wife. I gave it to him. I had 2 extra tickets. So we go to a concession stand, and it's like, I don't know, 6:03. The game starts at 7. Guy's like, we're closed. And all we wanted was something to drink. I'm like, you're closed? The game starts in an hour. How are you closed? We're not open yet. We have to wait till 6:00. fucking look at Mugachapi. Like, are you fucking kidding me right now? This can't be real life. If this was Citi Field or Fenway Park or Citizens Bank or PNC or DC or Merrill, any other place I've been to, the register's open when the ballpark opens, which primarily is 90 minutes prior to the game. And even this year, the Yankees opened the stadium up even earlier because they had a bunch of festivities going on for the kids because it was 4th of July week. And you still don't have the concession stand open? I mean, listen, I'm thirsty. I want my $7 souvenir cup soda, you know? So finally, we're standing there, and the security guard comes over to us. She's like, what are you guys doing? I'm like, waiting for the snack stand to open. And she looked at me because, you know, the security doesn't like you standing in the aisles if you don't have to because it gets really crowded. There's like 50,000 people that get to this game, you know? So she looked at me like, are you serious? And I looked at her. I'm like, shot her a look like, yeah, I'm dead serious. And she looked at the stand, and the guy just looked at her, and I was like, well, just step to the side. Put it up to, like, we're waiting there, and they're playing Toronto. So some Canuck, some Blue Jays fan walks past me, walks right up to the register, and is like, yeah, what kind of ice cream do you have? And the guy starts to purchase ice cream, and I'm like, wait a minute, I've been standing here for fucking 20 minutes. Are you serious? You let the Canuck buy fucking ice cream? All I wanted was a soda. And I looked at the guy. I looked at the guy behind the counter. I went, really? And the guy just looked at me and put his head down. Like, you know. So part of me was like, yeah, yell at this guy. But he makes fucking $9 an hour. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get him that much in trouble. And I was only there for soda. I wasn't, like, in a dire need of anything, you know. So there you go. As I sip my spark. What flavor is this? Fuji Apple. All right. I could dig it. So, yeah, we left early, like seventh inning. You know, I was like, Mikey's dad was with us, and he was like, oh, man, he goes, I'd rather just watch the game at home most of the time just to avoid shit like this. And I'm like, it was just like, it's not a fun place to be. And I love going, I can go to a baseball game every single day of the week. I can, seriously, no matter what park it is. That park, and not because I hate the Yankees, but and their fans, but not, it's not a nice park. It really isn't. It just doesn't have that, you know? Where you walked into the old stadium and you felt the Monument Park, all the ghosts of Yankee Pass. You felt Barra, you felt White, you felt Jackson, you felt Munson, you felt Whitey Ford and Babe Ruth, and you had a special feeling. Even when the Yankees were losing, they would draw in 2 million, 3 million a year, you know? They have a good following. And yeah, but every team has their bandwagon fans too, and I'll get into that on Will Morgan's show, but that's basically, you know, my week. Yeah, looking for other job opportunities, is, you know, trying to get my name out there, doing some stuff with the podcast. We have some really good stuff coming up for you guys. Next week, me and Choppy will be back live in studio, maybe in the new studio if I can get it done in time. And then, of course, the big 5-year anniversary show, which is the week after the 21st, and we're working on a very, very, very special guest for you guys. The person has committed to come onto the show, but has other prior commitments and wants to be on live during the anniversary show because of certain reasons. I want to surprise you guys, but we want to work around this person and facilitate that. So we can have, I mean, I can always pre-record it at another time, and the person already agreed to come on the show. He's already in. He's invested. He knows about the show. He knows, he knows the ins and outs, basically. So it is what it is. So that's what's going to happen. You're going to get it. We're going to have some in-studio guests, too. I know Rob from Thumbstick Ninjas. I think his brother, Lane the Brain, will be with us. Mega Powers will be with us. I think some of the Shining Wizards will be with us. The Unsilent Majority is gonna be there, hopefully. So we're gonna have a good time. It's gonna be good times, very, very good times. I'm excited. You guys should be too. All right, so let's get into some wrestling news. I got a full plate of stuff to play for you guys. A couple of things went down on July the 7th, and including 1996, which was the NWO forming, Hulk Hogan turning. It was so funny to watch. To watch it again, because you know what I mean. And now we spoke about this on the show. We spoke about it in length, and I think we even covered the actual pay per view. If you go back in the archives and look, but yeah, I can't believe it's been 21 years, man. 21 years, and I keep saying that because it doesn't feel like it most of the time. It's like all the stuff that has decade in the last 20 years. You're like, oh man, I can't believe this. You know, because it's been so long. You know, but it goes by quick. And they say, listen, man, once you hit a certain age, everything is quick. Everything, your days, your nights, everything is quick. Apparently, the older you get. So, man, I have a website that I go to. To look at like this year in wrestling, you know, like what happened this day, and when all the stuff came up, I was like, oh, that's right. And then it came up on my Facebook feed, and it was in Daytona Beach in front of 8,000 people. And I'll just run down the card real quick. We're not gonna dissect it and do a throwback because I think we did already. I have it all queued up. Where the hell is it? My computer's so fucking slow, man. There was a dark match. Jim Powers beat Hugh Morris. Nobody cares. The Steiner Brothers beat Harlem Heat for the Tag Team Championship. Hard Work, Bobby Walker beat Billy Kidman. The Rock and Roll Express beat Fire and Ice, which was Scott Norton and Ice Train. Good match here. Eddie Guerrero defeating Lord Steven Regal. Another good match after that was Rey Mysterio beating Psicosis. There was a Carson City Silver Dollar match. John Tenta, a.k.a. Shark, a.k.a. Earthquake, defeated Big Bubba. DDP beat Jim Duggan in a tape fist match. Double dog collar match. The Nasty Boys beat Public Enemy, Rocco Rock, and Johnny Grunge. Rest in peace. Dean Malenko retained his WCW Cruiserweight Championship, beating Disco Inferno. Awful Mongo McMichael, defeated Joe Gomez. Ric Flair beat Conan for the U.S. title. The Giant, a.k.a. Paul White, a.k.a. The Big Show, and the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan, defeated Arn Anderson and Chris Benoit. And, of course, the Outsiders fought Randy Savage, Sting, and Luger to a no contest when Hulk Hogan was the sixth man in that six-man championship, in a six-man in the match. I can't even fucking talk. But, yeah, Hogan was the third man, and he turned and basically changed the landscape of pro wrestling. One move, one night, changed 20 years of wrestling. It put WCW on the map. It made them a powerhouse. It made them kings in the ratings for over a year. It made Vince McMahon totally revamp World Wrestling Entertainment. It made him start basically the Attitude Era. Purchasing ECW, and then finally bankrupting WCW and buying the company. So you could see where, all that started July 7th, 1996. Crazy. Absolutely, absolutely crazy. There is something else that happened in 1990, July 7th, and I'll play that after the break. But let's see. Speaking of WWE, let's break down Great Balls of Fire coming up this Sunday, 2 days away. Great Balls of Fire on WWE Network. Enzo's fighting Big Kaz. Nobody cares. I hope they just push Big Kaz, though. Cruiserweight Championship, Neville against Akira Tozawa. I can't stand that fucking laugh Tozawa has. IC title match, The Miz versus Dean Ambrose. Nobody cares. Tag Team Championship, 30-minute Iron Man match. Cesaro and Sheamus versus the Hardy Boys. Seth Rollins versus Bray Wyatt. Alexa Bliss defended the Raw title against Sasha Banks, the Raw Women's Championship, I should say. Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman in an ambulance match. Should I be offended because I work on an ambulance? I guess not. And of course, the Universal Champion, Brock Lesnar, makes his return to pay-per-view. Makes his return to wrestling. Hasn't been fucking wrestling in 3 months. Defending against Samoa Joe. So, excited about that than anything. I want to see a stiff match. I want to see fists flying. I want to see ground and pound. I want to see blood. I'm hoping I see all of those things. If this match is any good, And I'm thinking it's going to be good. If it's anything that I expect it to be, and Choppy can contest this when he listens to this on the playback. I can tell you that it'll probably make up for the rest of the night. You know? And my cat's being annoying. Go away. Go away, cat. Thank you. But yeah, man, it should be a good time. That match should be a good time. I'm excited. I am very, very excited about this match. So I'll be home that night checking it out. I mean, listen, you know, we all know how bad Raw has been. It's trying to make the climb back into some kind of, you know, some kind of respectability. But it's hard when the booking is shit. And it's hard when you don't have that balance. And they don't have that balance right now. I think it's just a shit show. John Cena came back on SmackDown on Tuesday. He's a free agent. Basically telling everybody, fuck you on both brands. Because of what I'm doing now. And I'm doing movies and TV shows and shitty reality shows. And I'm on, you know. So basically, he's not going to be on TV all that much. And just be show up when he wants to. And he called out everybody. You know, which, you know, no disrespect, but who cares? You know, like if you're going to be a part-timer, that's fine. You want to be the next Rock. I mean, The Rock made $60 million last year. I don't think John Cena's making $60 million in movies next year. I just don't think so. You know, I think it's going to be, he'll show up here and there in his little role. I know he's got a movie coming out about bike racing, I think, about a bike team on steroids or something. I read something on a movie poster in the subway. La Pharmaceutical or some shit like that. He's in that movie. So, yeah, I know he does shows and all the nonsense. So, either way, whatever. Nothing much more about SmackDown. I know Nakamura and Baron Corbin are heating up. And that's really all. The match with Gable and AJ Styles was really, really good. I enjoyed that. That kid's got some talent. So him and AJ tore it up. That was a fun match to watch, too. So SmackDown still, man. SmackDown coming correct. So, all right. Let's get into some New Japan news and screw load, which I watched both nights. The first night was on Access TV. I had to tape it because I was at a wedding. Disappointed because I wanted to be home and watch it. I was more disappointed initially because the venue that we were going to, my wife and I, wedding, we've been to two other weddings there and the food was absolutely terrible. And it's like, you know, you want to do the right thing and put some good cheddar in the envelope for the couple that, you know, they're starting out their new life together. But when the food, give them a nice present, you're like, oh man. But do you know what? They changed chefs or something because the food was fantastic. We had a good time. We danced. My father-in-law sang at the wedding. The guy's not even professionally trained. He was just singing. He's killing it. So, you know, that was a good time. And my screen, you know what? I'm just going to start printing shit out again because this computer is the shits. I'm going to have to fix it. It's like 5 years old and it's fucking freezing up on me like whatever. But I want to run down the matches, but now I'm waiting for my computer to unfreeze, so I'll talk for a minute until the, you know, so. Let's say, oh, here we go. Bullet Club for Chaos. Chaos was Okada. One second. My fucking mat. What is this thing, man? I don't. Bullet Club for Chaos. This is ridiculous. So sorry, guys. I'm just going to... Los Ingobernables de Japón for Jushin Liger, Volador, Dragon Lee, and Titan. That was a good match. My fucking... I can't, you know... Titan hit the Takahashi beat Titan with... I love Takahashi's finisher, man. He got he hit Titan with that time bomb finisher. I loved it. Jay Lethal versus Hangman Page in the tournament for the U.S. title. That was a good match. Jay Lethal won that. Let's see. Zack Sabre Jr. versus Juice Robinson. That was a good match. Sabre picked up the win. Billy Gunn, Yoshitatsu, and the Tempura Boys. I'm sorry, Yoshitatsu and the Tempura Boys. For David Finley to Kushida. War Machine beat the Guerrillas of Destiny for the heavyweight tag team titles. That was a good match, too. War Machine is just on fire right now. Ishii upsets Naito in the tournament to move on, which was crazy. That was an upset. A-plus, though, man. Kenny Omega beat Michael Elgin. That was a great match, too. And, of course, Okada defeating Cody to retain the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. So that was the first night. And night two. Do I have night two here? Let's see. My fucking computer is the worst. It is the worst. Night two. There we go. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun. You're cutting into my fucking time here. I had a whole time schedule. Now it's all ruined because my computer sucks balls. I just should have printed all this stuff out like I used to do. I just don't. A lazy fat ass. But wait for this to load. I thought Cody was going to beat Okada. Best wrestler on the planet right now next to Kenny Omega and AJ Styles. No doubt in my mind. Okada has been killing it every match. First match was Liger Kushiding Komatsu, Sho Tanaka, and Yu. The IWGP U.S. title semifinal match, Kenny Omega beat Jay, was a good match. The bad ribs. So Kenny Omega hit the one. He at one point, to finish off Jay Lethal with that one winged angel, but to get out of it. But he hit it again, getting a 1-2-3. But either way, it was a really, really good match. The other semifinal was Ishii again upsetting Zack Sabre Jr. to get to the finals. Now it's Kenny Omega versus Ishii for the championship. Dragon Lee, Jay White, Juice Robinson, Volador Jr. and Titan defeated the Takahashi, Sonata, Evil, Bushi, and Tetsuya Naito match. Guerrillas of Destiny and Hangman Page defeated War Machine and Michael Elgin. That was decent. Very stiff match that was. Roppongi Vice went up against the Bucks for the IWGP Junior Tag Team Championship. The Bucks did win. And, of course, Rocky Romero gets on the mic after the match and announces that if he had a conversation with Beretta, that they had 5 years, and if they didn't win tonight, they had 5 good years tonight, they were splitting up as a tag team because Trent Beretta is going to the heavyweight division. So. And it was a really cool embrace. They didn't nobody turn on anybody. It was a good promo. I enjoyed that. So look out for Trent Beretta. He's going to be doing some single stuff now. Marty Scurll, Bad Luck Fale, Cody, and Yujiro Takahashi, the Bullet Club, defeated Okada, Will Ospreay, and the Briscoes. This was a good match. He pins Ospreay with the Crossroads. Barnett and Ross were playing it up like who's going to be the leader of the Bullet Club storyline because there was some dissension in the ranks apparently. You know, IWGP IC title match, Tanahashi defeats Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn is 53 years old. Okay, him and Jushin Thunder Liger are the same age. Just keep that in mind when I tell you it was a good match. Gunn worked like it was a 1999 pay-per-view. It was really, really good. And you know, Tanahashi is the ace. He's the John Cena of New Japan. He's the man. So he hit the sling blade, then the high fly flow. Say that fucking 5 times fast. The high fly flow to retain the title. It wasn't the best match, but I mean, for Billy Gunn, it was really good. And of course, the IWGP US Championship final, Kenny Omega beats Ishii. You know, is it a consolation prize? Is it a step down for him not winning the title from Okada? I don't know. You know, it just puts him... He's still in the upper echelon. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, he's the toughest guy in wrestling, man. If Okada's the best guy in wrestling, Kenny Omega right now is the toughest. And give it up to Ishii, man, for putting on some good matches in his tenure in the tournament. You know, it was really good shit. So I guess night one was better than night. Well, you know what? Was night two better? I don't know. Commentary-wise, it was. And guys, I'm going to say this before I go to break. Leave Jim Ross alone. Please, whoever's listening, please do me a favor. Leave Jim Ross alone. I mean, I was at the wedding and my phone is, Twitter is on fire. I was trying to duck results and then I was like, nah, I just want the results. I'm just, you know, now I'm being nosy and obnoxious. Now I want to know who won and who lost. And Choppy was at a wedding also, like across, like in another, like far, further away than I was. And we're texting each other. He's like, oh, you got any results yet? And him and I were texting results back and forth to each other. And all I saw was Jim Ross sucks, Jim Ross this, Jim Ross that. Guys, Jim Ross is a legend. Jim Ross is our generation's Gordon Solie. Jim Ross is our Gorilla Monsoon. You know what I'm saying? He's our generation's, well, not actually, your generation's Gorilla Monsoon. I had Gorilla Monsoon in my generation. So do yourselves a favor and critique the match. Don't critique the fucking, I mean, I know he has a run sheet. Okay, I know Barnett has a run sheet. I know they know who's going to win. I know they know all the names and all the stuff that they're supposed to know. However, you know, the guy just lost his wife, and all he's been doing is working since his wife died. So you want to throw him some fucking, you know, keep throwing shade at him. You guys are real petty. No disrespect, but you guys are petty. Leave him alone. That's all I got to say about it. Leave him alone. Leave Jim Ross alone. Jesus Christ, man! You guys are—I just not really our guys. Only a couple of our guys in the circle of fans that said anything. I didn't get that much feedback on the show pages, but I just saw it live on social media. It was just disgusting. So, all right, listen, take a quick break, plug our friends, and we got one more segment before the Little Egypt interview. All right. So hang out with us for a few more minutes. You listen to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. We're live on Rant EM Radio. And Lord Alfred Hayes will take us into the break.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
If you're not tuned in to the Shining Wizards, listen to what some of our fans have to say about the show.
Oh my God, I just love the Shining Wizards. It's four fucking virgin marks complaining about a fucking fake fighting show. Keep going, boys. The Stallion fucking loves you.
Tune in live every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. East, rantemradio.com. It's the Shining Wizards, where it's wrestling talk and talk about wrestling.
Are you a pro wrestling fan that also listens to heavy metal? Neckbreaker was designed just for you. Wrestling headlines, metal panels, drinking games, and interviews with guests including Chris Jericho, Nile, Frankie Kazarian, Symphony X, Eric Bischoff, and tons more. Have some drinks with us and listen to Neckbreaker Podcast, available for free on iTunes, Google Play, the Shining Wizards Network, Stitcher, or grab our full archive over at neckbreaker.net.
Do you like obscure references?
Vince just did the old Joel Gertner hand dance, which is awesome.
Pointless banter.
It's that chicken I smell. I'm gonna roll this rock out of the way.
And political dumbfuckery.
I haven't played this bad since I was in my 20s.
Then join us every weekend on the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, your source for anti-PC entertainment news and commentary.
Hey, it's Mike from the Midnight Jury. Join myself and my co-hosts, Adam, Cal, and Sydney, as we bring to you the best in 80s and 90s pop culture, pro wrestling, and horror movies. You could join in the conversation on Facebook and Twitter, and we are available at our home at WLWstudios.com, along with the Midnight Jury feeds on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and TuneIn Radio. Forget about Blu-ray, forget about iPhones, and forget about flat-screen TVs, and travel back with us to the last old-school generation when it was all about Walkmans, arcades, and malls. Once again, that's The Midnight Jury, available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, and our home at WLWstudios.com.
Buddy, this is original Globe Girl Little Egypt, and you're listening to Turnbuckle Throwback Radio
podcast. And Steve has it all going his way.
Shoulder block. He's got his feet on the rope, and Scotty Steiner just tipped him off. Blair would have liked to have had it cheaper. He'd like to have any kind of victory at this point. But he's got his schoolboy roll. Two and a half. Two and a half.
He's been that close several times now.
Got hit locked by Flair. Head scissor by Sting. Sting gonna bridge up. Look at the strength of the challenger. He's got both arms covered. Can he get him over? Flair on his shoulders. One, two, one. And we're inches. We're talking inches from a new champion of the world. Look at Flair topping with all he's got. And the challenger is standing tall. Championship of the world. The Stinger has done it. The Stinger has done it.
Sting is the winner.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner and new world heavyweight champion, Sting.
We're back. Yeah, a little Slayer for you. Doing some Iron Butterfly. I was in a Slayer mood this morning, but I didn't want to go too heavy on you guys. So I'll work with a cover song. Alright, we're back. Turnbuckle Throwbacks Live, we're at emradio.com. Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, the Amazon Echo, the Roku. There's so many platforms you can listen to the show on. It's awesome. So, yeah, man, I just played this Sting clip from 1990, Great American Bash, July the 7th, from the home of Lee Champion, Baltimore, Maryland, at the famous arena. Good card, though. Brian Pillman beat Buddy Landell. Mike Rotunda beat the Iron Sheik. Doug Furness, rest in peace, beat Dirty Dutch Mantel. Holly Race beat Tommy Rich in a geriatric match. The Midnight Express champions of the U.S. Tag Team Championship defeated, let's see, the Southern Boys, Tracy Smothers and Steve Armstrong. Big Van Vader made his North American debut, beating up on the Z-Man. That was the best 2 minutes and 16 seconds of my summer when he beat the Z-Man. I popped so hard, and I mentioned it on the show a bunch of times. how nobody in the room at the time I was with, the people I was with, they didn't know who Vader was, and I knew who Vader was from the magazines and tape trading. I'm like, that's Big Van Vader, Japanese fucking gaijin. He's massive. He's dope. Guy, he's 400 pounds, throws moonsaults. And when he made his debut with the ceremonial headgear that he had, oh, man, I popped so hard for that. The Steiners defeated the Freebirds. The dudes with attitude that was Orndorff, JYD, and El Gigante. Oh, Christ, remember El Gigante? My kids got an action figure of him. Thanks, Tank. Rest in peace. Defeated the Horsemen, Sid Vicious, Arn Anderson, Baron Windham by DQ. Lex Luger defeated Mean Mark Callis, a.k.a. The Undertaker, to retain the U.S. Championship. The World Tag Team Championship, Bustin' Heads, Doom, Ron Simmons, and Butch Reed defeated the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky and Robert. That was a pretty decent match. And then, of course, you know, the man, the myth, the legend of Turnbuckle Throwbacks. You know who he is, man. The man they call
Sting.
Sting! Triple H was pissed. Sting defeated the Nature Boy Ric Flair. For his first WCW heavy, oh, the NWA at that point. It was still the NWA. The NWA Heavyweight Championship. Ole Anderson was with Ric Flair. So, yeah, man, that was a good time. This was one of my favorite cards of all time. The New Revolution, they called it. You know, 14,000 fans of Baltimore. So dope. I enjoyed that immensely. So, yeah, a lot of stuff happened July 7th. You had the Great American Bash from 1990. You had the Bash at the Beach from 96. So it's a good day to be a wrestling fan. It's a good day to be a fan of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks because you got me one more time solo. And then, in September of 2014, we interviewed Little Egypt. And that's when he talked to, this was 2 years in the making, the whole GLOW thing was going down because they had had a reunion. They had the documentary on Netflix, and they would talk about bringing the show back, and it was like, you know, it basically snowballed. So we jumped on it, and by chance, I met Little Egypt via social media, and I'm like, listen, we do an old school wrestling podcast with fans of GLOW, you want to call in? She's like, yeah, and she actually applauded us for being knowledgeable, and, you know, she was happy that we knew our shit. Of course we know our shit with Turnbuckle Throwbacks, and fuck you think, lady. But, you know, she didn't know that we knew our shit, so now she knows. So we interviewed her. It was about 40-something minutes of a good interview, so I hope you enjoy it. And I'm going to play the entire interview, and then I'll be back to wrap up the show. So without further ado, here's Little Egypt.
All right, so joining us on the podcast this evening is the lovely and talented original GLOW girl, Little Egypt. How are you?
Great. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic.
Been awesome.
Yeah, so glad that you reached out to us a couple of weeks ago. We did an episode about GLOW, mainly because we had gotten requests for it from our fans. And
oh, awesome.
Yeah, truth be told, I was not – see, the thing is I grew up on the Northeast. Dave and I did. And
right.
And women's wrestling for us growing up – I'm a little older than Dave. But growing up, it was like – it wasn't – part of the card, it was just an attraction, and it was never really taken seriously. But I mean, GLOW came out when I just became a teenager, so it was very, very, very special to me.
And I was even younger, right. And I didn't know what was going on. I think I was like under 8 years old when I saw GLOW, and I was like, this is awesome. It just fit in with the whole like 80s, like everything, you know, WWF character driven, like a comic book.
Are you guys there?
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, I'm sorry. You got cut off. I apologize. Finish your sentence.
Ah.
No, we're just saying that, you know, Dave, I'm 10 years older than Dave. So for me, I got as a teenager. Dave got it as a little kid. And it got a cult following after the documentary came out. So
we actually had a cult following before the documentary.
Well, I mean, for our inner circle of podcasters and friends and stuff, it picked up more steam, obviously, after the documentary came out. But I know you've done the rounds. You've been on The Shining Wizard. You've done a whole bunch of stuff with Steve Austin, Colt Cabana. But, I, you know, we just want to get into a little bit more, not very much more, but, you know, just the same old because our fans are they're anxious. They want to know what's going on. And what's going on with you currently right now?
Okay, well, I live in Laguna Beach, and have a very nice life. I get to be around a lot of my Glow sisters because the original cast and many of the Glow girls from season 3 and 4 came up from L.A. So when the show ended, they ended up back here. So I'm within driving distance from a lot of them. And I feel really blessed to be back in the area. So it's really cool. And I got to tell you, I don't know why, somehow I saw that you guys were doing a podcast on Glow, and I thought, well, that's going to be interesting. I'm going to tune in and listen. And every time you guys were, when you were breaking down the documentary, when you were breaking down the history of Glow, I kept telling myself, oh, they're not going to know the backstory. You'd go in one direction, and in my mind, I think this is where they're going to stop. They're not going to be able to go further than this point. And you did, which tells me that you guys not only were fans of the show, but you did your legwork as, you know, hosts and podcasters, and I really appreciated that. And I thought, you know, it was very nice. It wasn't a podcast that was designed just to kind of put over Glow. You guys were really honest. And I don't know how you got so much of the backstory, but you did a great job. And so I think we should take it a little deeper. And if you have any questions that you don't think have been asked before, I'm happy to answer those and be really, really transparent with you guys.
We appreciate the kind words, because the premise of our podcast is we do two segments. We talk about the new stuff. Dave doesn't watch a lot of the new stuff. I do, unless it's...
And I'm younger than Phil, and I don't watch any of the new stuff. But you watch new stuff, don't you, right? Because I remember you on Austin's podcast talking about Karma. So, do you still keep up with the new product
now? I can't hear you.
Oh, you can't hear me? Do you hear me now?
Hello?
I think you might have to speak for me, Phil.
Now, can you hear me?
I can hear you now, but you completely cut off, and I apologize. If you could please say that again, so I can put my mind around it.
So our podcast is two segments. We do, you know, a segment about all the new stuff, the indies, and what's going on, some news and notes, rumors and whatnot, and then we do our throwback. We pick an angle, we pick a certain match, or we pick, you know, a certain Fed, you know, case in point, Glow. At that point, when you listened in. And we really take pride in going into this history and watching the stuff, and that's why I started the podcast, was because I felt like I mean I've done this my whole life. I've talked about wrestling my whole life, read books and magazines. Mm-hmm. And so I felt it was important when I did started doing the podcast that it was you know at least know what you're talking about and take care of the subject matter. It's not like we're just trying to put anything over. We actually did watch this stuff. We didn't. And not for the sake of the show, we actually watched it and went back and watched it. So I'm glad you actually caught on with that. We really, really appreciate
it. I do. I appreciate the fact that you want to be a source for the source, and that's why I reached out to you guys and wanted to tell you how much I appreciated the interview, and I really enjoyed listening to it. And I thought out of all the podcasters that I've spoken to, you guys are right up there with the best of them.
So let's get right into it. You came in season 3, I believe, right?
No, I came in at the end of season 1, and I stayed through season 2.
Okay.
After I just put you guys over.
No,
I put you guys over.
Yeah.
Phil ruined everything.
I know, I ruined everything. Because I have a... I don't want to go, but like the Wikipedia is the thing where you look at it, and you know people can add stuff to it, and I didn't want to... You know, so I'm just cross-referencing and trying to listen in where you are. I don't want to be that guy that just reads Wikipedia and asks you a whole bunch of questions that may not be true. You know what I'm saying?
So, right. Yeah, I totally get it. So, and I'm just pulling your leg, and I don't expect – I mean, there have been over 60 girls cast for that for those 4 years that we were on the air. And it's unless you were able to memorize – 4 seasons of 104 shows, over 500 matches. How in the heck are you going to know what girl was in what season unless you absolutely followed that girl religiously. So believe me, I'm just pulling your leg. Don't worry about it. But I was at the end of season one and stayed through season two until I was injured and had to go into retirement.
Okay. Dave?
And that happened during the match with the Heavy Metal Sisters, right? Or she can't hear me, right?
Yeah, she said. So the match with the Heavy Metal Sisters is the one that put you out, right?
Yeah, it was, and it was funny because actually it wasn't funny. It was surreal. My first match ever was with the Heavy Metal Sisters, and my last match was with the Heavy Metal Sisters. So it was a really nice full circle in my Little Egypt legacy, and I just love Chainsaw and Spike. I absolutely adored working with them. Those two girls were a riot. You could tell in the documentary that these girls, and they're real sisters, they just were talent. I mean, they just bled talent, and they figured out real quick that they didn't not enjoy taking a lot of bumps. So they worked an angle around having to do some really tough technical wrestling and stuck to props, and they were able to shine and stand out amongst all the wrestlers. I think they're right up there. If you're looking at talent and what Glow was about, don't you think they exemplified that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now take us through a little bit of the process. I know that you said a lot of girls were casted and that the documentary talks about, you know, how, where you guys stayed and how, but go a little bit into like the camaraderie when you guys first got in. Was it when you started training with of course, legendary Guerrero Mondo? Does it, like, you guys, do you realize what you're getting yourself into, like, as you start training, or did it hit you before? Talk about that for a little bit.
What, that Mondo was an influence in our training?
Absolutely.
How that affected us?
Well,
Okay, well, honestly, most of us girls did not know much about the Guerrero legacy, but it was drilled into us by Steve Blantz, who was the lead writer, and also probably the world's biggest wrestling fan. And he was so cute and adorable. He actually was the ref in season two. I don't know if he went on to continue reffing in season three or not, but he was the little Jewish guy with the glasses.
Yes.
And just adorable. I loved him. And he, you know, he and I had some great conversations, and he really helped me put my mind around just what was going on. And he was like, you realize, you know, these girls that came from L.A. were trained by Mondo Guerrero from the Guerrero legacy, their dynasty and what it represents in wrestling. And then I would be, oh, yes, okay, that's important. Need to remember that, file that. And then he was also influential in telling me about what this program was all about and how we were trailblazing in wrestling, that we were walking this incredibly fine line between wrestling as we knew it back in the WWF days, right there in the middle of kayfabe. We were practicing kayfabe, and then walking this fine line on sports entertainment. So we were sports entertainment before the word really existed. We took wrestling and we campified it. We brought a lot of skits and vignettes to the program. We had see-through storylines, but at the end of the day, there's something really comfortable about see-through storylines that you can, even though you most likely can, you know, read it real easily, it was fun to just kind of like let that go and just enjoy the characters. And we were so fortunate that the vignettes and the skits allowed us to develop our characters outside the ring.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that was a huge advantage to, you know, getting put over. And it was a huge advantage to getting the viewers to, you know, lock into our characters.
So talk about a little bit about the Glow House and the daily routine. How was it after you guys, now you're in and now you're starting to work, and talk about the house that you guys, you know, apparently you guys are on lockdown and you got to stay at the house.
Right. And so there was an evolution of Glow that occurred. when season one came over, they were talent booked from LA, and most of them were models, actresses, some stunt women. You know, Mount Fiji came over. She was a football player. You know, she brought over Spike, who's we call it, her name's Donna, but she played football with Mount Fiji, and then Spike brought in Chainsaw. And so all these little back storylines, which I don't talk about a lot because I'm never really asked, but there's those girls came in and they had their mindset was business. This is a job. We've been cast. This is what we have to do. This is what we have to learn. And there was a incredible camaraderie with those women because they were the ones that were trained by Mondo. And what happened when the show was moved to the Riviera Hotel is they did not pick up Mondo to be the trainer. Instead, they hired Debbie Dallas, who was in season one.
Right.
She was also wrestled as the Killer Tomato. And she started training the season one girls on set, and that was really instrumental to the girls of season one because they were actually able to throw a body, you know, that they could lift, and they were able to work with Debbie hands-on. And Debbie had no intention of getting in the ring, but one day all the girls were going out and they were all dressed in costumes, and so Debbie put on a cowboy hat and looked like a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader, and Matt Simber, the director, saw her and he was like, Debbie Dallas.
That's awesome. So, I mean,
so
you get this camaraderie. Now you're like 19 at this point, and like
I am.
Like you come in and it's got to be like eye opening. Like you're a young lady and you're in there, and it's like it's got to be. I wouldn't you know, describe that to me and the listeners that's gonna listening later on. I mean,
Well, you know what? It's I have a son. He's going to be 22 next month. And I keep thinking if he would have came to me at 19 and said, Mom, I'm going to be in a wrestling show, I'd be like, you're crazy. You are not going to do that. Because I would be wanting him to further his education and, you know, doing things that a normal 19-year-old would be doing. But when I was cast for GLOW, it was really happenstance. Mount Fiji needed a T-shirt made. She came into the T-shirt store I was working at, and then I just could not stop talking to her, and she was so charismatic and friendly. And she told me I needed to go down and talk to David, and even though I wasn't convinced that I could do this because Olympia was with her, and I could see that Olympia was like, because Olympia's this monster bodybuilder. And I kept thinking, there's just no way. But Mount Fiji was very persistent. And she was like, here's David's number. Call him. Go meet with him. There are small girls on this show. My tag team partner is Mount Fiji. Little Fiji. And you could definitely wrestle with us. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to do it. I called my dad, who was living in New Jersey. I'm living alone in Vegas now at this point. My mom was in Turkey. My dad lived in New Jersey. And I was like, hey, Dad, I was just asked to, you know, wrestle for a television show. What do you think? Am I ruining myself? Like, is this going to kill me in 20 years? And he was just like, Angelina, you have got to do this. He goes, when you see opportunities, hon, and you're not ready to take them, just move your feet. Walk through that door. It just is once in a lifetime that you're going to be able to take advantage of an opportunity where you could, you know, be part of wrestling and have that part of your history. And I think it's amazing, and I think you should do it. And the whole time he's telling me, I realized, like, years later, he probably did it for the free beers at the bar. He got so many beers.
But you got that encouragement, and I think that's pretty much what you needed at that point. So you're in, you're working, you're training, you're working together with the girls. I know you mentioned in another interview that you like to work with, you mentioned Chainsaw and Spike and the Doll.
Mm-hmm.
Who else did you like to work with? Who was a couple more of your favorites?
Oh, I loved Amy the Farmer's Daughter. I thought, I remember when Amy came in, I was we were at this point, the season two cast was being trained by Attaché, who I adore Attaché, and we still have not found her. I don't know where she is. I hope all the effort that we're doing to create like a legacy will draw those girls out that I haven't been able to find. But, you know, I remember when Amy came in and she couldn't do a somersault, you know, or a three quarter roll, and she turned out to be a fantastic wrestler. She really was amazing and had a real good career after GLOW when she went on to POW and actually ended up in Married with Children as well on a separate episode. We're not as her character, Amy, but she was also in Married with Children, so it's kind of cool.
Awesome. And so, you know, I know it's easy. It was easier back then, obviously, to keep the kayfabe outside the ring. Did you guys, was everybody good with that? Did they practice it well? There was others that were really bad at it?
No way, man. We knew, I mean, our jobs depended on it. That was so clear. It was so clear to us. We had, we were able to, at the Riviera Hotel, eat in the buffet, right? We had these buffet tickets. Right. And it was limitless. Oh, my God. We had these buffet tickets. We'd go. We'd eat at the buffet. And when we were up in the buffet, we had to maintain kayfabe. So if I saw Chainsaw and Spike in one corner, I made sure I was in the other corner. And then, like, Olympia would come sit over with the good girls and the bad girls. And then Anushka would go sit with the bad girls. And they just talk. And that's just the way it was. We did not interact unless the doors were closed to the hotel room. And then, you know, there was stuff going on, obviously a kinship, a friendship, because when we were given our matches, you know, that was our quality bonding time. We didn't have outside influences when we were putting together these matches. It was just, you know, I would go up to Chainsaw and Spike's room and we'd just kind of talk about it and they'd throw crazy ideas at me and, you know, we'd have fun and we'd laugh. And then if we needed ring time to kind of walk out the match, we would do that. And so that's the kayfabe that was there. I mean, it was so crystal clear. When we were on tour, we had a good girl bus and a bad girl bus.
I was hoping you would say that because it's.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
As a fan of the newer stuff, I get so frustrated when I don't see that no more. And I know it's the sign of the times, and I know what goes on is, you know, it's different now. It's more entertainment. It's not wrestling that much anymore. It's really, really, really entertainment. You'll see these guys in the restaurant together hanging out, and you know, when I was a kid, that didn't happen either. You know, if I went to a diner locally after a match, you know, you'd see all the wrestlers sitting in one booth, all the bad guys on one side, all the good guys on the other, and that's how it was. You know, they traveled together like that, so that's cool that you guys had that camaraderie.
Oh, and, yeah,
and keeping the kayfabe. So here's the thing too. I totally forgot about this. Dave actually brought this out to me. There was a match that you had with Dementia.
Now
you know the one I'm talking about. So
it was like the bloodiest match in the history of GLOW. After that match, we were no longer allowed to use blood bags because of the letters that were coming in from upset parents that their kids just watched, you know, Little Egypt get eaten by a crazy monster. And it ended. It was the end of the bloodbath. I enjoy Dementia so much. You have no idea. I mean, I am in touch with Dementia, but she doesn't want to really engage with the fan base, and that's her right. But she was a very technically very strong, precise wrestler. And I felt really safe. She was almost too strong. Like, when she threw you, it was just like it had force, you know? It wasn't just like gravity taking you down. She slammed you into the mat. And I loved wrestling with her. I wrestled with her a couple times. But that particular match, they couldn't even do a commentary over it. You know how, like, they would have these little commentaries where Fiji or Nanushka would get in and say, that puny, she can't. Look at her run around the ring. She's
right.
Scared.
Right.
You couldn't do that. You couldn't, because it was like ridiculous. It was get her out of there. And then Steve, who I adore, the referee at the time, who was also the lead writer. I mean, the best he could come up with was watch the hair pull. She's like tearing off my calf. And the best he can come up with was watch the hair pull, Dementia. know. He's so funny. He was so funny. But, yeah, that was a very bloody match, and it ended the blood, us working with blood after that. And so it's very interesting how things evolved.
It seemed like you guys had a good chemistry, and that was probably one of my favorite spots. I totally forgot about it, and thank goodness for Dave. Dave brought it out to me. He's like, we did all the research. I'm like, I totally forgot about that. We have to ask her. So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was physically an exhausting match, and she was, I just ended and basically just screamed and drug my rear end all over the mat trying to get away from her. But that was, how can you pretend, like, you can't not, once you start screaming, you can't stop till the match is over. Do you know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
It's not, like, you've got to keep it going. You have to keep that momentum of what actually just happened to your leg from the point where, like, once you got hurt, you got to sell that injury the entire time. And it was exhausting, but I loved working with Dementia. She ended up becoming a co-trainer along with Attaché, and she led, like, our physical activities. Like, cause she was a aerobic instructor, and so we all started doing like aerobics in one of the rooms, and she, you know, she had us doing push-ups to strengthen us because Matt was like going crazy that we weren't in peak physical condition. That drove him bonkers.
Right.
It did, because he knew we were going to get hurt if we weren't strong, and that our wrestling needed to continue to develop in order to have an entertaining show.
Right. So before I get into the documentary, I got to ask you something about the Riviera. Now, I know when you guys moved over there, I mean, when you watch some of the tapings, when you go back now, because I have some stuff on VHS, but not much, and whatever's on YouTube. Uh-huh. But when I go back and watch, did they just let fans in, or they actually had to, like, was it a side attract? Was it a part of the hotel, or did you have to pay separate admission? Did you guys have a regular fan base over there? Was it like a...
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. Okay, so when we were filming season one, we had the big, like, convention facility, and we could really hold a lot of people in there. So it was always a packed house, and we never charged admission. That way we could use the, obviously we can use the faces of the fans, you know, without having to pay them.
Yeah.
And then when we started filming in season two, I don't know, for those diehard Glow fans, you'll see that the lighting completely changed. We had more of we were in a smaller room that we could light better. You know, we had another camera, and so we were able to get different angles. And there's probably the famous crotch shots and every angle that Matt tried to get, we tried not to give him, you know.
Right,
it was like,
of course.
You knew the camera was right there, and it was like, no, but damn it, those guys were good. Matt, he's so funny. He comes from, like, that type of film industry. He was doing sex educational movies, you know, just to have a reason, you know, just film naked people and stuff. So,
right.
So that's kind of what was going on. And so, no, we didn't. Now the room's smaller, right? And now people are still queuing up. Not everyone gets in. Now this room only holds a few hundred people, and it's packed. And the kids get there early, and it's just they line the corridors where we come in, and that's stuff that the camera didn't pick up on, but it was so amazing when the kids would come week after week, and they were so afraid of the bad guys. Like, they'd run up to, like, the good girls, and they're like, oh, my God, aren't you afraid? You're getting ready to go in the ring with Nanitschka, and oh, my God. I'm like, calm down. It's okay. I'm trained. She's not going to hurt me. She is not going to hurt me. Don't worry. I'll be fine. And so, they wanted the bad girl's autograph so bad. And a lot of times they didn't get them because it had to be done right, you know. And they started figuring out ways to give these kids autographs within their character. And it was kind of cute to watch that, because as a good girl, I never had those issues. But I got to see the bad girls kind of get real creative with that. And it's, you know, all part of my memory. It's burned into, you know, what Glow was for me, and so glad it was all captured on film. So glad that that part of my life, I get to, you know, I get to be able to pull up on YouTube. You know, not a lot of people get to see injuries, you know, that they sustained with cameras, you know, like
most
people blow out their knees, you know, getting groceries out of the car, you know, and I got, mine was taped. So
that's it.
So that was, you know, really super, super interesting, very fun. I could tell you it was the best time of my life. How could it not be?
And you guys did house shows too, right? You guys did like, how far did you go out touring? You guys did like, you know, stuff, obviously, like the Doc Maxwell, you know, the house shows and stuff. Did you guys do a lot of those or, and what was the schedule like?
A lot more house shows during the season breaks in season 3 and 4. And we only went out one time.
Oh.
Season 1 and 2 cast only went out one time. What happened, and it's, I don't want to go into a long story, but the David was getting ready to separate from GLOW at the end of season 2, and we absolutely adored David McLean. He was one of us.
Right, so that's, you know, that's when Johnny C came in, right? The
Johnny
character.
C, yeah. He came in season 3, never really knew Johnny until after GLOW ended and we started doing the documentary, but as far as David McLean goes, he was, we all looked up to him. We loved him. He was just, he worked with us like wrestlers, and Matt worked with us like we were talent. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So when David was getting ready to split because whatever issues he was having, not, you know, they were kind of shutting him out, like, you know, it was becoming a full on Matt Simber project. And so he ended up taking, by choice, I mean, this one, we volunteered, we left with David to go on the POW tour, and he took everyone but Nanushka, whose mom was making the costumes, so she wasn't going anywhere. Hollywood was ready to quit GLOW, but they kind of begged her back, so when we were on the POW tour, she wasn't with us on the POW tour, so they went in and they were able to get Hollywood to come back for season 3 and 4.
And she was the only one that, I think one of the only ones that stayed for the entire tenure of the Fed, right? She was on all 5
right.
seasons, correct?
It's 4 seasons, and, well, and Mount Fuji was there. Yeah,
right.
Mount Fuji was there for 4 seasons too. So yeah, it was a real small handful of girls. Like that was, she, I mean, Hollywood story is amazing. So we left with David, we do the POW tour, we kind of keep all the same gimmicky characters, we just change them up a bit, and, you know, and then GLOW gets recast. And at this point now, the brand awareness is huge for GLOW at this point. So the girls coming into casting calls already have their mind around what they wanted, you know, like they knew they should have some wrestling training, you know, that they need to, you know, kind of come from that,
right.
And they did, and so that's the difference between the season 1 and 2 cast and the season 3 and 4. A lot of the there were girls coming in for season 3 and 4, like Godiva, Thunder, what was her name? Yeah, Thunderbolt was friends with Sally the Farmer's daughter. So you know, and like, you see how that kind of happened? Like girls were bringing their girlfriends and. And it was getting, the spots were getting filled that way. And so it was a really, I can't speak about season 3 and 4. I wasn't on tour with them. It was my career ended at that point.
Right. They had the 4 seasons. They tried to bring it back. That's why I mentioned season, they call it season 5, but really was, it's like a, it was like a revival. It wasn't really a full season, but the, now another, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned a few times that you talked, you still keep in touch with some of the girls. And they don't want to get involved in any way. But after the the documentary drops, and it's absolutely amazing. It got rave reviews, bunch of awards it won. I don't remember the awards. I didn't look all that up. But I know it won a few awards. And I was reading something locally here in the New York paper about it. And then that's when they debuted on one of the cable stations. Now I got to know that how many girls did a lot of the girls that didn't want to get involved? Did you reconnect with any of them? Or girls that want to come back, like wanted to get in, but they didn't know how. Like, did you reconnect with anybody after the documentary came out?
Yeah. So when I gave my interview I drove from Vegas because I heard that there was a possibility that Matilda was going to be there on the day that I gave my interview. And I thought, you know what? I've not seen her in over 20 years, and I would just love to say hi to her. So I drove in from Vegas and then drove back that same day, but I just needed to see Matilda. Ended up, I got to see Hollywood as well. Met Lightning for the first time, Ursula, Babe, the farmer's daughter. And these guys were telling me, you know, what their intentions were for the documentary, and they were also telling me who they had as far as who they found, which, frankly, was just a handful of girls, and only a few from season one and two. And I thought, holy cow, you're getting ready to do a documentary on a show that spans four seasons, and we don't have enough testimonials to really tell the truth, the story here that needs to be told. And so I told the guys, I said, if you give me some time, I will find more girls, because I want to, and most, and I have to hand it to these guys, Brad and Brett, they could have put this in the can in 6 months, okay? Because this was going to bank, okay? Just GLOW, the documentary, was going to bank. But they didn't. They let me have the time to find the girls, and it was not an easy process. It took me 2.5 years.
Right.
I found over 40 of them, and a lot of the girls that you saw in the documentary that don't want to have, like, social media profiles showed up because there was no fans there, because they just wanted to interact with the girls and have that moment and then go back home.
Right.
And so that was really special to me, and I respect the girls that don't want to have online presence. But I definitely keep them in the loop on things that are going on of importance so that they can still feel part of the family. Just because they don't want to interact doesn't mean that they don't deserve to know every detail that's going on. And I have nothing to do with GLOW the brand. Okay. Ursula owns GLOW the trademark.
Right.
But I have been over the years the unofficial spokesperson of GLOW and the official spokesperson of this documentary. The guys gave me a co-producing credit on it for my work that I did. And I was directly involved in every component. I was able to see this documentary cut several times. And I was the one that was able to get Billy Corgan to come in and do the commentary reel with Matilda and Hollywood and myself. And then, I continued to, to be that voice for the documentary, because this is about the legacy, not the brand. It's not about what you can do with the brand, how you can monetize the brand. It has nothing to do with that. This is about a legacy of a group of women, and that's what I'm passionate about.
Absolutely.
And that's what I fight for.
Absolutely. A legacy that's a cult following, and anybody mm-hmm. who's not into wrestling, like, I've been a wrestling fan almost my entire life, and when you talk to people who are not wrestling fans, they know two things. They know Hulk Hogan, and they know GLOW. And seriously, it's funny because my wife and I watched the documentary, and we were just, towards the end, obviously, if you guys haven't seen it, I'm talking to my fans when they listen. You guys haven't seen it, you need to get out there and get it. It's amazing. When you watch it, you could tell that all of this was heartfelt. And like you mentioned, there was no fans. The girls showed up because they knew there was something going
mm-hmm.
on. And it was like that to me, the realness of it, and to my family and to all our peers that watched it, were drawn in. Again, I was 12, 11 when this came out, so I'm almost a teenager.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is just, it was something else, and you knew it was something else, and it was special. You know what I'm saying? So, like, for someone who didn't like women's wrestling growing up, it was so entertaining and something else, another alternative on a Saturday morning. I was like, this, you have this wrestling and you have that wrestling. And it was like, it was different. It was innovative, and it was way before its time. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that's what people are missing too. I think, listen, don't get me wrong. I'd love to have a box set of all this stuff. And you mentioned, it's not the monetary thing. It's definitely not. It's about the legacy, and it's about the awareness now that you started pretty much and followed through with on social media, which is amazing.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you, because it's you know, anybody you speak to that's over 35 years old is like, it's all about GLOW. You know what I'm saying? It's like, and you always, we always come back to it. So when Dave and I did the episode a couple of weeks ago, it was like, you know, and you reached out to us, it was like we were beyond stoked. I was like, this is awesome.
Aww.
And we really appreciate you coming on. Dave's like, Dave can't chime in. He's just asking me questions to ask you before we go.
Is he slipping you notes?
He asked me a couple one more thing he wanted to add. He wanted to know how far the speaking of the documentary, how far did it get out? Like what countries were giving you feedback besides us, and were they longtime fans from other parts of the world?
Oh my God. Well, when we had a 2-year film festival run, we won the Hot Docs Audience Choice Award at the Toronto Film Festival, which was huge for us. We won Best Documentary San Diego Comic-Con 2012. We had a global film festival run. I mean, we were in Korea, we were in London. It was one of those, you know, just little engine that could documentary. And if you when you look at this documentary, it's beyond like a wrestling documentary. It's a documentary of sisterhood. It's a documentary of women coming together. I mean, where do you find, like, in entertainment where a show gets canceled and the girls lose touch for 20 years? Not 5 years. Not, like, we didn't have email. We couldn't exchange cell numbers. We didn't even have a heads up. Hey, you're not coming back for season 5. So that there was no, like, last minute, okay, listen, ladies, this is our last match. Everyone give me your phone number. I want addresses. Nothing like that. It was just the end. And that is where, when you're in something so unique, and it's really, really hard to try and explain that, like, your experience with other people, you go into post-traumatic stress. I mean, it is very hard for us. So you have to put it behind you. The girls that didn't, there are some that so unfortunate. Not everyone had like a Cinderella story. And it, you know, some of them clung on to hopes and dreams of like fame and fortune, and others that were like more realistic, they just went on with their lives,
right,
and chalked it off to a great experience. So GLOW, the documentary, was just an, you know, we're streaming on Netflix in Canada. We're streaming on Netflix in the U.S. And I was just told by the doc guys that the Netflix contract is a 2-year contract, and it's coming up on like the last 5 months. And if Netflix doesn't renew it, which I hope that they do, but if they don't, this is like your last 5 months to see the documentary.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to end on a few little, you know, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Roxy ran a very successful Kickstarter campaign to have the first ever Afterglow party. And that is a fan party that is going to be happening on October 25th. In Hollywood at the Acme Comedy Theater. The day that we came out with our ticket sales, we are already halfway sold out. So it's a small theater. Anyone in the Hollywood area, we're rallying girls, and it's going to be a Q&A segment. It's going to be fun for the fans because it's our chance to give back to the fans. And this was Roxy's dream. And she's wanted to make this happen for so long, and she was able to raise the funds and secure everything she needs to secure so that she could say thank you to the fans the way she's always wanted to say thank you. And we get to be a part of that because of Roxy's vision.
That's awesome.
And the way that, it's just amazing. I'm so proud of her for what she did. I'm ecstatic that she was able to launch a very successful Kickstarter campaign. And then, so we've got the Afterglow, the first ever Afterglow, and maybe the last ever Afterglow. So don't wait around and think that we're going to be doing this every year. Where you will be able to see a congregation of GLOW Girls is in April of next year at the Cauliflower Alley Club, where we show up to cheer on our fellow wrestlers as they get inducted. And so far we've had two of our girls inducted into the Cauliflower Alley Hall of Fame. We've had Tina Ferrari,
yep,
a.k.a. Ivory, and then Debbie Miller, Killer Tomato, Debbie Dallas.
Yep.
was inducted last year, and it's such a amazing experience for us, and it warms my heart to know that the wrestlers in the industry at the time that we were wrestling enjoyed our product. We were so sequestered, we didn't even know if they liked us or not. I mean, we had no idea. We had no way of taking the temperature or having a gauge of how are we going over. You know, we knew we were going over with kids and guys, but within the industry, we didn't know. Like, we didn't know if they wanted to kill us for what we were doing or, you know, it turns out they enjoyed it. Turns out they liked our show. And you know, to get put over by, you know, Sergeant Slaughter, Honky Tonk Man, Steve Austin.
Steve Austin? Yeah, you were involved with Steve Austin and the Broken Skull Ranch stuff. And how was that? How was working with Steve? Was that cool? Or?
Well, I hosted an AfterBuzz podcast where I was doing Redneck Island, and now they're doing season 4. So let's hope that we keep moving forward in that direction, because I would love to do another segment.
Yeah.
Thrilled. And I met Steve a few times at the Cauliflower Alley Club, and so... you know, we were Twitter buds, and through that, I was able to get him to come onto my podcast, and then he invited me onto his podcast, unbeknownst to me. I did not know that he knew so much about GLOW. I knew that he knew the product, you know, and he never pulled me aside and said, you know, I can tell you every episode. He's never said that to me. But, oh, my God, for those people who enjoy Steve Austin and his Steve Austin podcast, I did do one with him, and we broke down that show to pieces. We broke down that show because he was so curious about, like, how that product was coming together and what was going on, and he asked me some amazing questions, and I so thank Steve for the you know, the launching pad that he gave our documentary, and I know that increased our Netflix viewers, and it was just amazing, and I adore him. He is to me a super stand up guy. He's one of the good guys in this industry. And to be like the face of the WWE for a decade and not carry that as like pompous, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's to me like, I mean, you've got to give it to this guy. I mean, this guy is a good guy. And you know, a lot of people think because he's Steve Austin that, you know, he's a movie star, he must have a movie star mentality. And he does not. He is such a cool dude. I mean, look at the AfterBuzz videos that we did. They're on YouTube. I put together snippets of, like, outtakes, and I put together, like, best ofs. So you don't have to watch, like, 4 hours of us. But, you know, go check those out on YouTube. They're absolutely amazing. And you'll see, he's just a down-to-earth, nice guy. He's a gentleman. He's a southern gentleman.
Well, before we let you go, our fans actually wanted us to do a show about GLOW, and we're so glad you reached out to us, and I'm glad now I did the show with Dave, the episode with Dave, and we're so glad to have you on here. Before we let you go, is there anything else besides the after party you want to plug, anything else you're doing?
Yeah, you know what? Okay, so if you have any talented graphic designers out there that like to draw, okay, I have launched a store on ProWrestlingTees.com. And I am looking for T-shirts, like I'm using my character. And what I'll do is if it's a design that I like and that I'm able to use on my store, I will give you the first T-shirt hot off the press and a signed GLOW DVD. And then, you know, your work will be featured on a T-shirt that people will buy. So,
that's awesome.
I would love to see someone come out. You can find me on Twitter at Little Egypt. You can find me on Facebook at the official page of Little Egypt. You can find me at my profile, which is GLOW is my first name, Little Egypt as my second name. And in the notes section on my profile, I have links to every GLOW girl on Facebook and Twitter. So if they're able to be found, you will be able to find them on my site. Go there first. Use it as a resource. That's kind of how I built it. I want it to be the first place people go to get the accurate information on what's going on, and then be able to direct people from there to their favorite GLOW girl. How's that?
That is fantastic. So, again, we want to thank you so much for taking time out to come talk to us. And this has been this has been an absolute pleasure. Please come back soon. Let us know what else is going on, if there's something else brewing. Hopefully, though, this sparks more interest and we get more stuff out there about GLOW. And, you know, again, it's just a great time in our lives, and it was great to that you shared all your stories with us, and we really, really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. And, again, gentlemen, thank you for doing your job. Because it is a pleasure to hear a podcast that, you know, is insightful and accurate. So, again, I enjoyed it, and happy to help you guys out any way I can in the future. Please call me anytime.
Absolutely. We'll be talking to you soon. Thank you so much, Alicia,
okay,
for calling in.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And there you have it. Future Projects became a hit series on Netflix now. So thank you, Little Egypt. We're trying to get it back on the show. It's a little harder now that she's a little bit more popular than what she was 2 years ago. But nonetheless, the best part was the ending when she thanked us for being knowledgeable. I took good pride in that, man. Took a lot of good pride in that. So, I hope you enjoyed the interview. The interview was great. One of my best ones. A lot of fans of the show, newer fans of the show, did not know that we interviewed her. We mentioned it. So, now we played it for you guys as a, I guess, kind of a throwback for you. And, I hope you enjoyed it. It's refreshing when you can relive your childhood through the people that were actually there. You know, especially with a celebrity and stuff like that. She's a celebrity in our little realm of a small realm of, you know, fandom, pro wrestling and whatnot. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a credit to her. It was a credit to us for getting her, and it was just a good old fashioned fun time. And she broke down every single aspect of it. And at that point, the documentary was out, and it picked up steam. And everything she said happened. So. If you haven't seen it on Netflix, go check it out. If you haven't seen the documentary, go see it. It's out there. It's really, really good, really informative, and all the girls come back. And some of it's a little sad, but most of it's incredible. And the new GLOW is not as hokey as the old one was. I can tell you that. It's not kid-friendly either, so hide your kids, hide your wife, and all that other happy horse shit. But anyway, I'm going to wrap this up. We'll be back. Choppy and I will be back live next week. We'll have a throwback for you. We'll have the aftermath of Great Balls of Fire and anything else that's on Choppy's mind. In my mind, we'll break it down for you. And of course, we'll always have a great throwback for you guys. So, don't forget this Sunday. You have the What Are You Reading comic book show, Mr. Silver Surfer, and then immediately after that, I think it's 6 o'clock. You're going to have Double A and Tony C with a special episode of The Rant to lead into Great Balls of Fire. So definitely check that out. And then, of course, Monday you have the Sports Report with Mr. William Morgan. And then you have Rant and Wrestling on Thursday. And then you get me and Choppy back on Friday with Terminal Throwbacks. And all the replays are on rantemradio.com as well as all the content. Go to terminalthrowbacks.com. And get all our back catalog and support all of our friends who are not network affiliates. There's plenty of links up there to everybody. Please go support those guys. Give them some shouts. Let them know that, you know, tell them Phil sent you. You're not going to get anything, but you'll probably get a thank you. So, shout out to everybody, by the way, who's been supporting us, especially on social media. We want to thank all of you guys for checking in with us. It's been a pleasure. It's an absolute honor and a privilege to be doing this every week for you guys. I can't thank you enough for 5 years, and I'll thank you guys more in 2 weeks. And this song we're going out to the man, the gangster himself, New York hardcore legend, Gary Meskill, bass player and singer, formerly of the Crumbsuckers, now of Propane for the last 20 years. I love Propane. He was brutally assaulted the other day in Brussels in a robbery attempt. He's in the ICU right now. He's recovering. His wife put it on social media. So, Gary, we love you. We're thinking of you, and Propane, one of the best live bands ever if you get to see them. They don't tour the States very often because they're like one of the most popular bands in Europe. They're like the David Hasselhoff of New York hardcore in Europe. So please support Propane, and this is his song. And and rightfully so. It's entitled Stand Tall. So, guys, you know, take care of yourselves, each other, avoid the clap, don't get arrested. Don't say the N-word. Be kind to animals. Be a good human being. Don't be an asshole. Treat people with respect. It's 2017, for Christ's sake. All right? And I think that's it for me, man. I'm going to bid you guys adieu. Same bad time, same bad channel next week. Hope you guys had fun. I know I certainly did. Oh, yeah, we'll give you a review of Spider-Man, too. So, guys, I love you, really. Take care of yourselves. We'll be back next week. Good night, Gracie.